Welcome back, everybody. This is the Dang Ol' Venture Boys, a dedicated Venture Bros podcast. I am one of your hosts, Johnny, and I am here with my good buddy,
Mark.
And we are going to talk about two episodes of that beloved Adult Swim classic, The Venture Bros. Mark, what'd you think of this week's episodes? Oh, wait, don't tell me, because I don't want to know yet, because that spoils a lot of things. We're going to jump right in, because that's how we do this, apparently, and I am still very new to this format, and so it's going to sound rough for a while, I think. It's fine. It's cool. Let's tune in to our communicator watches for episode 3. For those of you that don't want this episode spoiled, here's a good place to stop and give the episode a watch. Okay.
Let's do her, buddy.
We open on Unterland, the perilous home of Baron Unterbite, as he dispatches those who have wronged him in a most German joke-themed way. We find Brock leaving for a wilderness retreat, leaving Hank as the man of the house. When Brock arrives, he finds there is a cryptid hunt afoot. Meanwhile, at the Venture compound, Doc finds he has garnered the attention of both a monarch and a baron when they try and assassinate him. As the boys and Doc are trapped in the panic room, their only chance to survive is an emotional robot named Helper. Brock helps the bionic comrade and his Sasquatch lover escape to Canada, and Doc and the boys survive the onslaught of two archings in one night, mostly because the guild rules and red tape hold everything up. You know, Mark, it's always much easier to do this thing in Mexico. Let's jump into our notables cast of characters here. First appearances. I would be remiss, and guys, of course, the biggest one here is Baron Unterbite, right? It's got to be him.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen him in the opening credits, so we know that he's been thought of as for a while. Like, he had to have been in their original pitch for the show, I think. He's voiced by a guy named T. Ryder Smith, and he's done a bunch of different stuff. Like, the theater geeks in you and me would kind of enjoy. He was in the Equus revival with Daniel Radcliffe. He did.
Oh, okay.
He was in the original cast of War Horse. And I'm like, oh shit, I remember that being really big when you and I were in school together. Like, one of our professors was like obsessed with War Horse for a hot minute there. T. Ryder Smith. But I think, Mark, I probably know him best, and you might as well. I don't know how well. How much did you enjoy BioShock?
Quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, well, he is definitely the voice of my favorite character in the first two BioShock games. He's the voice of Sandra Cohen.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So I thought that was that was a weird pull. I'm like, okay, let's rock and roll. Let's see what it is. T. Ryder Smith, welcome to the show. Welcome, Baron Unterbite. We're excited to have you here. Then our other kind of notable first appearance, somebody who's going to show up quite a bit, is the voice of Girl Hitler in this episode, Mia Baron. And she's done a decent amount of stuff kind of in and out. She does some voiceover work, but we will know her from this show as a couple of other very consistent characters going on through. She's the voice of Sally Impossible, Dr. Richard Impossible's wife. You will meet her eventually. You remember Dr. Richard Impossible, right, Mark?
Yeah. The not Reed Richards, yeah.
Exactly. So I'm excited for you to see what Sally Impossible's power is, because it's not quite Sue Storm. But Mia Baron also is the voice of a character we will meet just next episode that I am beyond excited to talk to you about. And that is one Russian spy Molotov cocktease. Hot damn, I'm excited. Oh man, am I excited. Anyway, Mark, what's a rusty venture?
Oh, Johnny. A rusty venture is when you're hitchhiking down a long and lonesome road and you take a shortcut to mushrooms and then you sight a tall drink of sassafras before you and you guys, like, fly off into the sunset. But maybe that was just a dream.
I mean, the Yeti is my father.
He's gonna protect me.
He fucking better. Because I know it sure ain't that pro wrestler or Texas freedom fighter, Steve Austin. What are your stand-up moments jokes in this episode? Sorry, I'm ruining half of my shit right now just because you and I are herpy-derping around. I was really excited.
No, you're good.
I forgot that we get into like cryptids and shit this early on in the first season because we've already seen the Chupacabra and now we're getting Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is how I should have sold this show to you.
I mean, yeah, dude, like you're giving me these deep cuts. Yeah. Jersey Devil too. Like, yeah.
right. So, yeah, give me some of your standout moments here. We'll kind of ping pong them back and forth.
Yeah, sure. So some of my standout moments, Baron Underbite and his like crew, Catclops, Girl Hitler, and Magic 8-Ball. I love it. I'm in. Why is Hank wearing a headdress? I don't care. His name is Runs with Scissors.
Yep. Yes, it is. It's better than Runs with Mucus.
That's very true.
That would be Dean.
Oh.
He's always crying, okay? Runs with Mucus. It makes sense. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, you're fine, man. We have alluded to this before, and now we get it in Brock's Led Zeppelin Love. That's pretty cool.
Yes.
I just like the background. Just you can hear it in the background as he's headed up to the woods. I like that. It's cool.
Right?
Helper's Bindle made me laugh harder than I should have. I don't know why, but it was adorable and hilarious.
Because it's a fucking robot running away from home. I love Doc's lineup. Robots don't have feelings. And then he literally thinks back to three episodes of what we've seen. And it's like, oh shit. Okay. I have to apologize to the robot now.
Yep. It's good.
Oh no, it's great. Before we get too far off course here, because I want to go back to Underbite. Guys, if you haven't had a chance to check out the Loose Robes that Mark just did with his buddy Josh on Two Wizards, all about anime characters, you should go check that out because, Mark, I swear to God, Manic 8-Ball is just a My Hero Academia character. I don't know which one he is, but goddamn, does it not feel exactly like that? So does Catclops.
They both, honestly, I'm amazed there's not a girl Hitler in class A1. Like,
I'm trying to think, there's definitely, oh no, there's a character that is almost, it's, she's from the rival school. Like, did you watch enough of MHA to get to the rival school where the one, like, they all basically dress up like they're fucking Germans, like they've got the fighter hats and shit. There's one girl that I swear to God looks like girl Hitler in there, so it's like, meh, cool, you're blonde, you're not dark haired, but that's fine. Anyway, Manic 8-Ball.
God,
that's...
can you imagine that's your quirk, is you're just a normal human, but you always look like Hitler?
It's the worst quirk ever.
You can't change it. Like, you can wear a mask. That's, like, you can only wear, like, a full, like, luchador mask. Oh, my God.
It's the only way you can, fight anybody. Oh, man. Okay, next one. Perhaps the most German joke of all time, Tiger Bomb. Like, can I just say, that's the stupidest, funniest thing I've seen in a hot minute. Tiger Bomb. I love that even the, like, basic military scrubs, the dudes on fucking guard duty, know who the OSI is. It's the Office of Secret Intelligence. And they know who Brock mm-hmm. Sampson is. They go, holy shit, I want his cigarette butt. His reputation precedes him. I think we can take note of that here. Like, oh, you're a secret agent, but you are the worst secret agent. You're the fucking Archer of this universe. It's great. Anyway, keep going, buddy. Keep going.
Is Rusty leaking on me? Are you a leaker? Dean, are you a leaker too? Are you leaking on me, Leaky?
Dean's lactating too. I have that here as one of mine. Wow. Like, were you expecting a grown man to lactate? Let's be honest here.
I was going to say, you could also sold me on the premise for this by telling me that I could make another male lactation joke.
Yeah.
Now is as good a time as any to kick into Two Wizards Did It. We did a three-parter on Bigfoot, and then one of our SCPs, we talked a lot about spontaneous lactation.
Oh,
it might be the worst thing we've ever done, second only to me then reading Lactation Erotica featuring the guys from Metallica. I'm sorry, Guns N' Roses. Who's Duff McKagan?
Okay.
GNR, right? Is Duff McKagan?
Yes, I think.
Yeah, yeah, it was Guns N' Roses lactation porn. So go check those out, listeners. It's,
Mark, the Boy Scout in me wants to ask you, where do you put a tourniquet if the bite is on your neck?
This Freudian phase of yours is really out of hand.
The Freudian, oh, that kills me. That fucking killed me today.
So
I forgot that line.
So good.
And then I also have, holy shit, it's Mr. House when I just see Doc and his fucking robot. What's the robot's name? Gardo show up. I was like, oh my God, it's just Mr. House. Awesome.
Victor, what are you doing here on the strip? Well, howdy, partner. Yep.
As far as, I feel like I almost missed this, but I didn't because I put it in here for standout moments because he's not really like brought up as a main character, but I, as somebody who's watched this episode or watched the series a lot, recognize the voice immediately. We get introduced to a very important character in this episode, Mark, and that is Henchman 21.
Okay.
Henchman 21 is the henchman that works for the Monarch that goes up to the guys and says, hey, yeah, I know we're supposed to be on each other, like, on our own sides and shit, but we got some beers. Like, you guys want to hang out? Mm-hmm. Henchman 21, I don't want to spoil it. He is a significant character in the Monarch's, like, collective for the rest of the series. He is so awesome. So I'm really glad that you're getting, a glimpse of him. And that is 100% his character. Like, hey, we're just going to hang out. We're going to have some fun, yeah, we will do our duties. We'll still hench and all this shit. But like, hey, let's just take it easy for a little bit. We're all just trying to hang out and live. Okay, I have a question for you. And I already kind of broke this a little bit. But Mark, is this Steve Austin the wrestler or Steve Austin the Texas freedom fighter?
Yeah. It's Steve Austin the astronaut.
Guys. Please go and watch Dangle or go listen to Dangle podcast where Mark and I make this almost exact same joke because, Bobby Hill makes it and it's great. Also, right by Cape Canaveral's got an audible fucking laugh from me.
That was a great line. Yes.
All right. Give me some more, buddy. I know you got more in there.
Well, so that was all my notables. The rest are things that I noticed. Yeah. Except I want to ask you, we don't have a Brock fight this week. We get him throwing a knife into the woods and, hitting sass, but
right.
I'm not counting that, you know?
Okay. I have some at the end here, so I'm not leaving you out. I've got three for you to pick.
Okay.
Or at least three tangential enough.
My last
two standout moments jokes here are, if I stay in Germany, I might just need some hench work. Because I love the guys just like, I had nothing better to do and I had to work somewhere. And I'm like, well, I can't practice psychology here. So maybe I just need to go find work as a henchman somewhere. That'll work. And my last one is Brock saw sass dong.
That's before I had to shave it.
Yes. Okay. We are to parodies and references, unless you got anything else you want to throw at me before we get here.
I don't think so. Yeah. Parodies and references.
Okay. Did you notice anything specifically in this episode that you'd want to pull out?
Yeah. So all Dr. Doom is underbite. We get that. That's too easy.
He's already been called that, right? In Dia de los Dangerous. Monarch referred to him as Dime Store Dr. Doom.
So even, so that it doesn't count. Let's see, are you leaking on me, you leaker? Underbite uses that little weird orb with the blade. It's the weapon from Phantasm.
Okay, very good.
It's a not that great horror series. Also side pro, the villain fight is really cool. I like him and the Monarch and their various poses and attacks and weapons. I think that's a cool scene, but I don't know where to throw that in. Cause that is a sweeping pro for this episode is we get that cool fight in lieu of the Samson. I really need to stop fantasizing about Steve Austin, the $6 million man who also fought Bigfoot. Wink, wink.
Eh, one more. Will you come away with me? Lee Majors just seems like such an asshole.
Nicer than Lee Van Cleef. So when we go to assassinate Doc Venture, they drop a black tarantula and a black scorpion. Those are two American kaiju movies from the 1950s.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I am 90% sure that Black Tarantula's got Shatner in it.
Oh, shit. Okay. I'd watch the hell out of that. Is it as good as certain movies you and I've watched about Gila monsters? Because I don't know if I do want to watch it then.
Well, Black Tarantula is in, Black Scorpion is in Mystery Science Theater, so.
Oh, shit. Okay. Awesome.
Excuse me. Choking on coffee here. And sorry, my last one here. I am 900% sure that Gardo is ED-209 from RoboCop.
Awesome. Okay, I'm going to tell you what I ripped off of the wiki, and I know you got a couple of these right? So,
okay.
We have the Venture Brothers, their pajamas that they're wearing, right? They're separate superheroes. Hank is, in fact, Aquaman, and Dean is Spider-Man. We have Bigfoot and Sasquatch. I don't feel like that really needs to be put in here as, like, parodies/references, because everybody fucking knows Bigfoot and Sas. You hit Dr. Doom really, really good. The assassination attempt via tarantula is an homage to Dr. No.
You it's definitely James Bond.
It is, yes. You definitely hit Phantasm.
Because we just did the ninja, yeah.
We did. We did hit the ninja, exactly. You hit Phantasm already. You hit RoboCop 2 already, which I think is really fucking cool because you actually knew his name. They just say faces a reference to robot in movie. In the Ghost Story episode of the sitcom Rules of Engagement, Patrick Warburton's character relates a dream into which he and Lee Majors are hunting Bigfoot. So Lee Majors being the actor played Steve Austin. And then they say that Gardo's monitor displaying his master's face may also be a reference to the Spider Slayer from Spider-Man comics. Because it's got J. Jonah Jameson on the head-mounted monitor.
Okay.
They also said that because it was, I mean, this was 2004, I believe, the Monarch henchman using a spider to kill Dr. Venture and all that stuff could have been a Star Wars Attack of the Clones reference for how they try and kill Padme.
I thought about that, but then I kind of thought that was too easy because why would they?
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought about that, but I didn't. I don't know. That one hung me up a little bit. Yeah. Sorry.
I honestly like to think that they're big Bond fans, which is why we've seen two Bond style assassinations now. Like that makes more sense to me. I'm like, cool. We have a through line then. The $6 million man is Steve Summers or Steve Austin. And the bionic woman is Jamie Summers. So Steve Summers is a mixture of both.
Nice.
Several episodes of $6 Million Man featured a Sasquatch, and now I actually kind of want to watch it. He was an ally of Steve Austin.
You know who played Sas?
No, who?
Andre the Giant.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I definitely need to watch some of that now. And the last one here.
They're really... Dude, so... No, wait. Oh, shit. I think I'm thinking of Incredible Hulk. Fuck. You keep talking. I'm sorry. Because
oh, no,
Hulk also fought Hulk also fought Sasquatch, so I think that's what I'm thinking of.
Okay. The last one they've got here from the wiki is that Dean and Hank are both wearing their, they're sporting the accurate underoos to go with their tops. That way they actually look like Spider-Man and Aquaman. And I thought that was kind of fun because it's like, oh, these are underwear that were popular in the 70s and 80s. And I was like, oh, most of the people that are listening to this probably know what underoos are. We all had a fucking pair of them. Most of ours were Ninja Turtles. It was fine.
You should go with the turtles. Dang'll always go with the turtles, man.
Gotta do the turtles. Speaking of turtles, this is totally like just for you and me if you want. I watched the new Turtles movie last night and holy fuck was I impressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mutant Mayhem is real good. You should give that a shot if you haven't yet.
Like, it's, I think it was like $6 on Apple, and it was definitely worth watching.
Right on.
Okay. If there's no other references, all that fun stuff, Mark.
Tagging back in really quick, it was in fact Andre the Giant and the $6 Million Man. Mark was right. Pop.
Hell yes.
Thank you.
Mark, who's that guild member?
Who's that guild member? So you don't need to say it that way because I got the sound effect, but if you want to keep saying it that way, you can.
I might.
I think I might.
Either that or you
can
just, or you could just cut over me. It doesn't matter. I probably will because I'm drinking right now and I will forget that we had this conversation. It's going to be great. Mark, our new guild member slash villain of the week is, in fact, Baron Unterbite. We will see him in Unterland at least one more time. We get to see some cool, like, flashback episodes with him. They talk about, I've hated Dr. Venture since college. And like, we get to figure out how Baron Unterbite lost his jaw and shit like that. We also get introduced to Henchman 21. I put an exclamation point because Henchman 21 kicks ass. And we also have, I think, our very first official mentions of the OSI, Office of Secret Intelligence, and the Guild of Calamitous Intent. I believe.
Yeah, he makes the point to say, should we make the, should we file the report? He goes, no, to hell with procedure. Yeah, that's great.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are to Brock's kill of the week, and I told you I've got three of these for you to pick here. Because you're right, he didn't really kill anybody, but he kind of did. So, our kill of the week nominations for this episode. We have knifing Bigfoot, we have ripping off Summer's arm, and we have running over Gardo right at the very end. Because technically he kills Gardo at the end.
I guess that's it then.
Yes. I wanted to give you a couple of other options because I think it's pretty brutal of Summer just going, oh, God, that was attached to my brain.
It's connected to my brain. Yeah. Well, and as I think about it, if we go back and watch our RoboCop, Edie was thwarted by what, John? That's right, a flight of stairs. So
this is what you call wheelchair accessible?
I was going to make a really bad handicap joke because Patrick Warburton is Joe and Family Guy, and then I realized that number one, it'd be highly offensive, and number two, it's not that funny. I want to tag in really quick, however, and ask you, okay, so out of Unterland and whatever the monarch calls his, what do we call it, Grandma's Ashes base?
The cocoon, yes.
Yes, Grandma's Ashes, yes. So out of those two things, which authoritarian regime would you rather be a part of? Like, I get that Unterland is, like, really strict and shit, but, like, you know, we see the guys, they know how to drink, they know how to party, so, like, it tells me that, you know, you're not allowed to do that. Seems like there's mandatory free healthcare, seems like, yeah, I don't know, like, so there's that versus the monarch who's, like, you know, he got that dude off, you know, that one dude was on crack cocaine before he joined the Monarch.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, so I think I'm saying, like, number one, who's the better bad guy? Or, you know, like, good or bad guy? But then also, which one would you want to be in?
I think Baron Unterbite is the more intimidating of the two, for sure. But I would much rather work for the Monarch because, one, I'm not going to die at age 38 after my compulsory military duty, or for something like really stupid, like spitting on the street when it's illegal to, because, you know, they have the death penalty in Unterland for everything. But also, I get to like run around with these sweet ass wings, and I just get to like stare at Dr. Girlfriend the whole time. Fuck yeah, I'm going with Monarch every day, all day long.
But she doesn't let you eat chips. Those are for guests.
Those are for guests only. No, what was it? Those are for company. Yes.
Why don't you do it yourself, Mr. Big Pants?
She gets better. I forgot how rough she is in the first couple episodes, but as they realize that more people want to see her, she gets more developed here.
I don't know. I think she's kind of fun. Like, she doesn't take Monarch shit. We've seen her, like, take the piss out of him twice, like, seems to be a relatively strong female character. Like, I'm into her.
Yeah.
I think it's great. Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm excited to see where she goes.
Always super fucked up that she's dressed up like Jackie O the day of. Like, you know.
Always. Always. Yeah. Wait till you see her. No, I'm not gonna spoil it. It's good.
Okay, cool.
Okay, Mark, we are to rankings, and I'm going to walk through them real quick. Mostly because I feel like it's just easier for me to do this since I'm the one who thought them up, and that way it's just easier, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Guys, we have a ranking system here for whether or not you need some substance to enjoy this episode of The Venture Bros. And so at the very bottom, for our crappiest of crappy episodes, we have the must-have rank. This is an episode of Venture Bros that is pretty much unwatchable unless you're kind of fucked up. Not very good, doesn't have a lot of good jokes in it, all that stuff. But if it's a little bit better, but you could still benefit from some stuff, well, Mark, a dab will do ya. That's our second level up here. It's definitely going to help. It's not as necessary, but it also is pretty good indicator that, yeah, you're probably not going to want to watch this one. It's not going to make it into your regular rotation. After that, you got your mid-range, and that's our fun addition. It's always fun to be a little fucked up watching your favorite shows. Well, for the Venture Bros, fun addition, that's a dime a dozen episode. It's a good episode. It's not super standout-y, but it's pretty awesome. After that, we have our not necessary, and that means that you don't have to have anything in order to enjoy this episode. You can watch it stone sober and still find it funny. You got lots of good stuff going on. You can just laugh out loud and giggle to yourself and find these jokes horribly offensively funny. It's wonderful. And finally, we have our hurts to indulge. It's those rare episodes that are so good and they're so paramount to the series, it actually hurts to not be able to pay attention to it. And so you want to stay away from all of that wacky tobacco and all of that alcohol and whatever uppers, downers, and all-arounders you just happen to have in your household. These are our best episodes of The Venture Brothers. So, Mark, what'd you give this episode here?
I think it was our debut episode. I patted myself on the back and said, well, you know, Johnny, I'm something of a scientist myself, and being a scientist, you need to establish a control group. Well, guess which control group I established this week, buddy? That's right, a little dab did me. And I do believe a dab did this episode as well. I enjoyed it. It was funny. There was references that I picked up, but there was nothing that I lost because I was like, wait, what's going on?
Okay.
Yeah. Just a little bit, man. And it was pretty solid. How about you?
Nice. Well, I did one better than that, and it was fun addition, right? I did not imbibe watching this episode this week, but I kind of wish I had just a little bit. Because this episode, I think I would have found just that much funnier. Let's see, what did I write down here? It's pretty fun. We get to kind of see some of the politics at the end of the episode of the Guild. Mm-hmm. We're going to see a lot of that. It's this weird, like, boilerplate minutia that a smarter, like, it expects your audience to have a certain level of smartness to enjoy, right? The Venture mm-hmm. doesn't end up actually getting, like, killed or murdered, and they stop assaulting his house because why? Oh, red tape. They don't want to deal with the Guild. Mm-hmm. They don't want to have to sit there and mm-hmm. go through all the, like, political bullshit that they need to in order to make it nice and legit and legal. So they finally just go, whatever. So what saves him in the end? Paperwork. Like, that's hilarious. And that's very indicative of what this show is. So I also like that we kind of see that Brock has a heart of gold. I love that we see him sticking out for, the Bionic Man and or $6 million Man and his Sasquatch lover.
Can I flag on the play that Bigfoot should have been a lady because it was Patterson Gimlin Bigfoot film? I don't know. That was just what I thought.
No, I think it's funnier, and mostly because Brock had to see Sasquatch dong.
I guess, but I wanted him to see, like, big swinging beautiful, like, hairless titties, you know? Like, he shaved those. He's just like, oh my god, they're huge.
That almost like, would have been better. I also love that the guy at the end when they drive off just goes, dude, that was a shaved Bigfoot and the $6 million man with a wig on made of shaved Bigfoot, like totally just blows Bigfoot right through it. This is where I go back to, I think it was our pilot, where they have the asteroid. It just falls right in the middle of their yard. And they're like, oh, yep, we're just not going to look at that. We're just going to, like, wander it off. Somebody very clearly knows what's up here, and they're just like, eh, fuck it, it's Brock Sampson. He knows what he's doing. Good shit.
I'm not going to stop him.
I'm not either. I've seen that man get hit with a car.
What do you say, buddy? You what?
I've seen that man get hit with a car. I say we move on over. We move on over to the happiest place on earth, Mark. What do you think?
I think it's a good idea, buddy. Let's do her. Let's talk about the talented Mr. Brisby.
Yes, Mark, let's talk about the incredible Mr. Brisby. We're going to tune our communicator watches into episode 4, where the boys wake up to find they are in Africa. So they think. The Ventures have landed in Brisbyland, the happiest place on Earth. Roy Brisby has a very interesting proposition for Doc Venture involving Brisby life and cloning. The boys get liberated by the Orange County Liberation Front. Wow, that's a stupid way to write that, John. And brainwashed into stopping the coming scourge of Busy Bee. When Doc decides to fight back against Brisby, he finds himself on the business end of truth serum and depends on the kindness of strangers. Brock gets taken out of the picture by a drugged cigarette and wakes up to find he's been saved by the sexiest mercenary this side of Siberia, Molotov Cocktease. After a frustrating and sultry encounter, Brock heads back to the Brisby Dome to save Doc and the boys. I gotta work on my fucking copy here, because some of that was good, and some of that was just fucking terrible. I wasted all my good juju on the first episode. Hot damn. Notables and first appearances in this episode, we have Chris McCullough doing the voice of Roy Brisby. We've mentioned Brisby before, right? He's in our official... he was in our pilot, right? They did the Brisby Land and Busy Bee in Times Square. We've got the voice of Paul Bucock as Jonas Venture Sr. And then we also have the return of Mia Baron as Molotov Cocktease. There's a couple of other people here. We've got Mandalay and... There's something called Soulbot that is the name of Helper in all these episodes. And I'm like, I don't know who Soulbot is. That's weird. But I'm into it.
Okay.
Yep. But yeah, not a lot of notables first appearances for this. But Mark, I got to dare ask, though. Mark, what's a Rusty Venture?
Well, Johnny, a Rusty Venture is when you find yourself being part of a clandestine paramilitary organization and you get put on recon duty inside of a large hippo tank dummy decoy. It's basically a tank. Unfortunately, that tank breaks down in the tidal salt flats crossing into Florida and gets all corroded, and you really just start to rethink your life as you gotta venture out its butthole because the mouth is fused shut.
All of a sudden, I'm seeing some sort of weird fusion of Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, and Team Rocket flying around in their fucking Magikarp tank.
That's pretty much where I took it.
Yep.
Yeah, I really had a Team Rocket vibe going. Yeah, just like, is that Magikarp pooping a Meowth? That's right.
Oh, God. Okay, we're going to start.
As they're like shitting out, you know, like there's the like turd that is the body of James. Wait, is that? It's Team Rocket. It's Team Rocket. Should we help him? No.
Right.
No. Let's go. They just walk away. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
I saw that in my head.
I'm going to start here by giving you a choice selection of some of my favorite Hank lines from this episode, because hot damn, is that boy on fire. Check out the fifth leg on him. Are you on the rag? And you are so lucky I had milk this morning. Like, this episode may have solidified for the future why Hank is like one of my favorite fucking characters, because he is such a dickhead to his brother in such a funny way. But the, like, have you ever had anybody do the loogie thing to you where they just like they sit and they look at you and they drop the loogie and you have to try and suck it back up?
Yeah, I was never privy to that one, thank God.
Yeah, right. The first time I'd ever seen that was, I think, Big Daddy.
Yeah, that's right. And he, like, oh, yeah, and it hits the ground. Oh, fuck you. Oh, yeah. So gross.
And then he sucks it back up.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's much funnier when Hank does it, because it's much funnier to do it in front, like, on top of somebody than just the ground.
God, sorry, you're, like, grossing me out here.
Thank you. It's okay. Mark, do you think that Hank was drinking hot panda milk? Because I like to think he had some hot panda milk.
Now, is that panda a male or female? I don't know, but I'm going to get in there and shave it and let you know. Kill three birds with God. One stone.
Oh, before I toss it back off to you, I just want to make a comment that Roy Brisby looks like he wants to torture you out of pleasure for all of eternity. He basically looks like somebody from Hellraiser. Like one of the fucking, what are they called?
Cenobites.
Thank you, Cenobites. Like, I've been playing a whole bunch of Dead by Daylight, and you can even play as Pinhead in that. And I'm like, I don't care to know this movie series. It's not that great.
It's good. It has its moments. The first four are decent.
It does.
I think Hellraiser 3 is the one where we get, like, that dude, like, Captain Receding Gums, and then, like, there's the super fat one, but then there's also the CD player one that kills you by shooting CDs at you because it's the 90s. Yeah.
Right.
Can I tell you a story fifth leg, John?
I don't know. Can you, Mark?
Once upon a time, I was at the Albuquerque Zoo with a girlfriend. Which girlfriend is unimportant. The point is I was there with her family, which included her mom and her sister. And as we're there, we're looking at elephants. And I see the elephant pick up a tire with its trunk and stand it up upright. He stands it up and down. And I go, you guys, check out the elephant. And as soon as I say that, this elephant drops out a 4-foot-long dick and starts poking the tire with the dick. I swear to God, John, it was like tap, tap, tap. It wasn't like, you know, the blind, like, it's 3 a.m. and you roll over and grind your boner into your lady's back. This was like eloquent, gentlemanly tapping by this elephant. As tactile as the trunk is, so was this elephant's fifth leg, so to speak. And, well, I just wanted to die because I had pointed out to my girlfriend's mother and sister, hey, check out this elephant. He's doing a trick.
He's trying.
That's my elephant story.
Stuff. Oh. That makes me really happy.
Excuse me. It is too early for cold pale ale out of Ska Brewing. So I think we called this out, but I think this is different. The X1 is different now. The first X1 looked like the Blackbird from X-Men, right? Or am I crazy?
Honestly, I didn't pay close enough attention to see if they've gone through design changes, but it really wouldn't surprise me because we first saw the X1 in the pilot. So, like,
That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah, that would make sense. That would track, yeah.
Well, so to that end, then this new X1 is 1,000% the Johnny Quest jet, the one that they use in Johnny Quest. Okay. I recognized it immediately, that Hanna-Barbera Johnny Quest, yeah. Holy damn it Christmas is my new catchphrase. Like, oh my God, I need to start doing that instead of God damn it. Holy damn it Christmas, man. Oh my God. Yes.
Yep.
I'd like to introduce you to my I don't even know what he called it. I wrote it out as Companda. Is that what he calls him?
It's a Companda. Yes.
Companda. That's great, but also he won it off Bowie. Also in 1980, yep. Bowie had put out Scary Monsters and Super Creeps. I don't know if that has bearing or not, but in a weird like twist, the guy that did the guitars on that was the same guy who was on, he played Ziggy Stardust sometimes on stage. It's this weird like, or no, he played Major Tom on stage. And I know that we're about to get into some Major Tom shit when we get into whatever it is, the Something of the Sargasso or whatever that one is, but
okay.
I don't know, John. There's something happening here, and what it is ain't exactly clear. You tag in. You tag in. Or something. I don't know.
No, yeah, for sure. I got an audible laugh out of Crash Test Dummy Rusty when they're talking about, you helped your dad test some of the rides. And it's just a teacup going up and down, and he's dressed like a Crash Test Dummy. Like, oh God. And I gotta say, for an animated character, Roy Brisby scares the shit out of me. Like, it's something. It's something about how he's drawn, how he's performed, how he enunciates specific things. Like, just the general, like, the background of him is insanely menacing. I have to imagine this is exactly what Walt Disney would be like if he was still alive. Like, you know what? I'm the most powerful man in the world because I am the head and namesake of Disney. Like, you have to listen to me. I get to do whatever I want because I am the like, American family's best friend right now. And that amount of power scares the shit out of me. But just, like, God, Brisby is terrifying. I haven't had an animated character, like, get under my skin for a very long time, but he's one of them. He's there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Give me another one because I don't want to ask this question super early here.
Okay, sure. So again, well, not really, but so, okay, sorry, just a sec. Chlorohydrate is a real thing. Brock inhaling it is how you would deliver it. I don't think it's a good idea to light it on fire and inhale it, but hey, whatever. But basically it's chloroform that works a little bit quicker and doesn't okay. last quite as long. We used it till the 70s and then we switched to something else.
Okay. Nice. Good on you for looking that up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like to do my research. Also, hey, look, I'm on another list. I looked up chlorohydrate. Also, I want to go to Laser Zeppelin, which leads me to my next point of I'm at some point you're going to move back to the States. Like, you can't stay in Germany forever. I'm sorry, buddy. Like,
okay.
You got 7 years of happiness, which is just enough time to put us solidly in our 40s when you get back here. And I assume that we'll be living proximally close to each other. And at that time, we're going to go to every single, like, Laser Floyd, Laser Zeppelin, Laser Tenacious D that we can possibly get our... Laser Johnny Cash, Laser Marty Robbins, I don't care. Laser the Fallout New Vegas soundtrack. We're going to every single one of them.
I love it. I have never been to a laser show, and I have always wanted to go.
I went to a Laser Floyd at Cave of the Winds, and it was fucking cool.
Okay. Like,
I was 16 and sober as a cat. My mom took me because I was, you know, and I was really into Pink Floyd and I didn't say anything. I was just like, oh my God, like my head was exploding. It was great. Okay. So I don't know if this is kicking too into references and shit, but it's okay because this is a weird way to go. The Orange County Liberation stuck in my mind and I don't know why until, sorry, I'm burping on beer here. Come on, baby, get out of there. Okay, there it is. Sorry. And that stuck in my mind, right? Until they're doing the demonstration and, like, the guy, like, rips apart Brisby. And the other henchman makes the comment, man, you didn't need to set him on Patty Hearst. Now, do you know who Patty Hearst is, Johnny?
I know it's in parodies and references, but I'm glad you do because I didn't look her up.
So she is the daughter of newspaper magnate William Randolph Hearst?
Ah, Hearst Castle Hearst. Okay.
Yep. Citizen Rosebud Hearst. Yeah. She was kidnapped by an organization called the Symbionese Liberation Army, and she got Stockholm and ran with them for 18 months until she was arrested, by which time she had already robbed multiple banks. Wow. She was going to get put away for 35 years because of it, but she got out after 7. It's kind of crazy.
Oh, whoa. Okay.
Yeah. And then my last note here is, hey, you know, Cosmo says that orange is the new black. Oh, holy shit.
Oh, that's great, buddy.
Yeah. What about you, man?
Okay, so I got a couple more here, and I'll say my best one for last. I think one of my favorite jokes in this entire episode is Brisby constantly fucking himself up, like catching himself on fire, falling downstairs. Like, he is the bane of his own existence, and it's very funny. And it leads me to wonder, like, really, just how did you get all fucked up and have to have the, like, facelift stuff done? Just, mm-hmm. It's a very silly thing to enjoy so much, but I just love his, Mindy, I lit myself on fire again. also,
I'm sorry, I want to tag in really quick. That's a great joke, and he's like, you know, talking about whatever, and then he was pinned beneath the thing, and then he had the stroke, and it's like, Jesus Christ. Right. It's like, redirect, bam, stroke right. joke.
I also, for the record, I had to stop myself from trying to do almost an entire episode of this show with you, with my teeth shut, just talking like Roy Brisby, because I felt like that would get really annoying really quickly.
Yeah, it's not good radio. Yeah.
It's really not.
Unlistenable, some might say.
This is why we do it a little bit. I love Streetcar Named Rusty. That's fucking hilarious to me.
Yes.
Like, yes. Oh, streetcar, please. I'm a dame and you're a fella. Frisbee, stop or I'll tell Stella. Okay, my last one here. Because, and I already hit this episode once, but guys, seriously, go listen to Loose Robes Anime and hear Mark talk about anime ladies. Mark, I want to know, where does Molotov rank on your animated hotties list? And I wrote hotties with a Z because I want you to include Luann, because we all know that you have an unhealthy obsession with Luann.
Had, buddy, had. Had. New year, new show, new wizard, baby. Now I have put away childish things, and now I'm all about Baldovich, because all I want is that sweet, sweet, white-faced Keith David looking back at me.
You want Baldovich over Molotov.
Let me tell you, no. Let me tell you, dude. So the way that we're doing these, I edited that one this week, and it had been about 2 weeks since we had cut it. I had completely forgotten about your white face Keith David thing. And listeners, I need to apologize because there is an explosion of audio when Johnny breaks me with that image. And like, I just remember editing it and I see this like solid line of terrible loud. And I'm like, what the fuck happened there? And then I remembered.
I don't know if I've ever made you laugh that hard before.
Top 10, dude. That might be the top. Out of any show, any of the High Hammock show, 3 years of Two Wizard, like, collectively, like, 6 years of shows, that is the hardest that I've left in 6 years of shows. Like, so, okay, so, yeah, where does she rank? I don't know, because, I'm just gonna be honest, dude, she's got, like, Tuesday afternoon to the strip club face and or skin color and or body. Yeah, she looks good, but meth will keep you tight for a while until it starts going south.
Okay.
I'll be honest, dude. She is lower to me than Leanne Platter. They are equal levels of trashy and gross, and just because she's Russian doesn't make it not white trashy.
I'm almost offended for her because that is a fucking insult.
You know, man, I know that Baldovich is busted, but I know she's got both eyes, too.
Interesting. I did not expect that.
And she lacks an iron curtain. Which I know is Germany, but still, that's really funny.
It is always cold in Siberia, Mark.
But why, Johnny? Where does she rank to you? Is this your tsunade?
No, we're gonna see some fine women in this show. I don't feel like it's spoiling anything to tell you. You get to see animated titties in this show, like nipple and everything at a certain point. And she's up there. She's top three for me.
Okay.
Baldovich isn't in my top three. I didn't expect that one coming, but hey, some people want the Arbiter, I guess. Mark, where do parodies and references?
What would you have your Arbiter do? I got a new nickname for my penis. White face Keith David.
Parodies, references, buddy. What did you pick out of this?
I'm sorry, I had another flashback there. Okay. fucking A. Wow, that hit me too hard. Parodies and references. I am 1,000% sure the dudes rolling up in the hippo is a reference to something, but I don't know what.
Okay.
I'm not going to say Ace Ventura. I don't think that's it. I don't know. Let's see. Sorry, I'm trying to think back about this. So, Cocktease is Black Widow question mark. Or, you know, parallel import for sexy Russian spy.
Okay.
We talk a lot about David Bowie. Panda bears were big in the 80s. China loaned them out. I imagine that David Bowie's the only man that could get one in the 80s. So that tracks. I don't know. This one's tough because there's a lot that just hits you in the face. And now I'm like self-conscious about it. I also want a sidebar and petition that you need to start doing these too. Like, as you're watching the episode, and okay. then we can see which ones we both miss collectively.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I like that. I mean, I like the way we're doing it, but I also like that, too, because it helps me keep a little bit more engaged. So, that's fair.
Well, because I also want to know, I don't know, because, like, I missed, you know, oh, they're wearing, you know, Spider-Man jammies, because I thought that was, like, too... You know what I, so I don't know.
Yeah.
It's also, you've seen this before, so you're going to catch background gags that I don't.
Right.
I don't know. Like I say, this one's hard. It's, you know, Disneyland. Something about the Orange County Liberation again sticks in my head.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really all I got, dude. X1, Johnny QuestJet. I think I hit that already. Yeah, that's what I got.
Okay. So straight from the wiki, we have references to Streetcar Named Desire, which we both called out. Right? The okay, I've always yep. depended upon the kindness of strangers, Tennessee Williams, all that sort of stuff. You already called out Bowie. Let's see here. The character of Mandalay, he was named after a song that we've technically heard already that was done by J.G. Thirlwell. It was in the pilot episode, Terrible Secret of Turtle Bay. But I don't know because it's, I mean, the song Mandalay obviously isn't the one that Brock is listening to, the like parodied Zeppelin song from that episode. It's something different, but yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. The Bodyguard was partially inspired by Punjab from the Little Orphan Annie comic strip. You hit Patty Hearst.
Oh, okay.
Yep, you definitely hit Patty Hearst. There is, let's see here. Apparently there's a reference to Rear Window. Ventures asked his name, and his reply, reading from top to bottom, Lisa Carol Fremont is Grace Kelly's character in Rear Window.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. Mandalay is also potentially based upon the comic book Sin City. The character Manute.
Ow. Okay, maybe. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe. Okay.
Let's see here. Roy Brisby, he references Song of the South. He says that since Dr. Venture took over Venture Industries, profits have gone zippity-doo-dah. The Living Daylights. Okay, so here's yet another James Bond reference. When it dawns on Brock, he's been given a poison cigarette. He says, coral hydrates as he slumps to the floor. Bond does the same thing in 87's Living Daylights, but with a drink and not a cigarette. So coral hydrate is Bond yet again. We're sticking with Bond here. Like, that's the through line. If they try and say it's something else, like, you and I can go fuck off.
Yeah, that should be the reference. Well, no, it shouldn't, because I don't watch enough James Bond to make it. So
I don't either, but, and I kind of want to. I'm like, there's a rich lore here, and there's like 30 fucking movies. 30 movies. Sorry, you can cut some of these F's out here. I've had a lot of beer now. The name of Mr. Brisby comes from the main character of The Secret of Nim, and it sounds enough like Disney to make the point. Mark, do you know The Secret of Nim was animated by Don Bluth, a competitor of the Walt Disney Company?
Yes, I did. It's also terrifying. I hate that goddamn owl.
Right. Did you know Naked that Don Bluth is also a former Disney employee?
I did know that, but only because my lady watched all those Imagineer episodes.
Yes. Yeah. Before he went off to form his own company, he did stuff. I know he did The Rescuers. I'm pretty sure he's one of the main animators from the Disney Robin Hood, the animated Robin Hood with all the animals. Mm-hmm. He was like one of their animators from the 70s, and then he split off and did his own stuff. I absolutely adore Don Bluth. He's fan-freaking-tastic. Like, Secret of Nim, American Tale, We're Back, All Dogs Go to Heaven. Like, that dude made some really good animated movies.
Counterpoint, he's responsible for a bulk of our childhood-based nightmares. But hey, you know, potato, potato. Also, sidebar, John, you just talked yourself into doing a fucking podcast with all of our respective ladies as you guys collectively watch all the Disney animated movies because you care enough about it to do it compellingly. I'm sorry to say, but
I like Disney
movies.
You've
all been co-opted. Holly's in, J-Ray's in, Amanda's in. You got to pick one a week. I don't care who. That's what's happening.
It's a good thing Jessica likes the other two of them, so we're good.
That's what I'm saying. I hate to be the dude who, you know, just fucking affirmative actions it, but we need some fucking women on this network, man.
We really do.
I don't know any black people in Alamosa, otherwise we'd get that too, but...
There was one once. I thought we were friends with him. Anyway...
Which one are you thinking of? Dante.
Oh, no, I was thinking of a different one. I always forget Dante's black. Guy, I hope Randall. Hauser's listening to this, because he's going to get a kick out of it.
Oh, no, that's all getting cut out, because it makes me sound like I'm racist and sexist, but...
Anyway, so, Mark, we have a lot of references to the greatest company on Earth, right? The Walt Disney Company. We have, of course, Roy Brisby instead of Roy Disney, Brisbyland instead of Disneyland, Busy Bee instead of Mickey Mouse. Brisby's desire to stave off death through the science of cloning is a reference to the urban legend that Disney's head was cryogenically frozen. Guys, Pixar, it didn't happen. I don't think he actually did it, but please, I want to see somebody find the frozen head of Disney. And Roy Brisby exclaims, "Jiminy Crickets do something." Jiminy Cricket originated as a minced oath, but was later used as the name of a talking cricket in Pinocchio. We all know Jiminy Cricket. The last one here, Dean's animal collectible card deck, was a real thing that was marketed in the 70s and 80s. It's called the Wildlife Treasury Cards. I have never heard of this before, and I think that's cool as shit.
Oh, it was like the predecessor to zoo books. I remember there's a couple schools that I went to a couple schools that had a set. And yeah, it was just, you know, it's the animal ID card. It gives like the location, the name in Latin. Like, yeah. That's why Hank is like, oh, the elephant, Loxodon. Like, you can tell the males by the tusks. Like that's what it was, is, you know, it gives you the size, some trivia. Yeah, it was a cool thing, you know.
Interesting.
If you were a nerd like me, it was like digestible trivia that you could memorize, and now it's stored in your head. Yeah.
Mark, you like zoo books.
Oh, I fucking love zoo books, dude.
You hit a core memory with that one with me just now.
Say, listeners, and Johnny, maybe you didn't know this either. Did you know that zoo books are, and most of the magazines you read as kids, are free on the Internet Archive, and you can go back and read them, and you can just go trip down the body nostalgic, and oh my god, dude, when you look to the one that's like the prehistoric evolution of horses and shit, and elephants, it's gonna like, your head's gonna explode, because you're gonna see it, and you're gonna remember, man. It's gonna be great. I'm excited for you and the listeners to do this.
It's like when I find the one Animorphs book that I used to own, and then I go, oh my god, I've spent so much time looking at this cover.
John, do you want to do an Animorphs podcast?
No!
Where we just re-read Animorphs?
No!
Those are also on the Internet Archive, and we could just read one a week and discuss, and it would take us 20 minutes, buddy.
I'm sure they're there with Goosebumps. We don't need to do it, buddy.
We could call it Animorph Musings.
We're moving on. You got anything else for me?
Yes, a new podcast coming to the High Hammock Network. Actually, okay, so I'm not going to lie. I got so caught up in zoo books and nostalgia. We're still in trivia bits, or like, you know, the references, right? That's where we're at still?
Yes.
Okay, then no, I don't have any. I'm sorry. What else? Favorite moment, favorite line? What are we thinking here?
All right, so we are too. Who's that guild member?
Who's that guild member?
And this week, we don't really have a Guild of Calamitous Intent member, right? The closest thing we have is our bad guy of the episode, Roy Brisby, and we have the Orange County Liberation Front. They're kind of like, this is our lore
Brisby
building
section.
Brisby
shows up again, right?
Brisby shows up again, or at least I know he's mentioned again.
Yeah.
I know that, like, not to spoil anything, I think this is his one, like, real big episode, but we definitely hear about Busy Bee and Brisbyland again. So that'll be bad.
I know that I've seen his like weird face more than once. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Okay. So we have Brock's kill of the week, Mark, and this is a good one. Pole vaulting into a dude's mouth. It's not technically a kill, but I feel like it's necessary to say Christing Doc with a nail gun at the end of the episode, or his own dick in the bathroom after talking to Molotov.
Ha, 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 Oh, a conversation that just got cut out of Dangle Podcast was telling my young son to thap on it, so I'm going to go ahead and say Brock killing his own dick in the bathroom.
Yes.
I'm also adding that to the list here.
So, Mark, you've been working on this cumulative list here of our kills of the week since we started the season, right? What do we got here? Let's see if we got any like real big winners here.
So far, we got the mummy in the landing gear, the gator in the landing gear, the beating down muggers with the door, the Mexican checker auto parts, the parking lot dart battle.
Yeah.
Sorry, I got a page down. Chupacabra kill in the plane, Rusty venturing in the Monarch's lair, putting the Phantom Spaceman in the pretzel bender, strong arming man strong in space, knifing sass. Mandalay in the hallway, Molotov cocktails, and the duvet of death. That's when he picks her up, puts her in the bedsheet, and beats the wall with her, which I think might be my favorite fucking scene in this episode. The bathroom dick beat down, or the beat down in the beehive. Which one do you pick?
I mean, it's really hard not to pick the bathroom beat down.
Okay.
Like, it's really hard. It's really hard. No, I'm going to say the beatdown in the beehive so far. Like, I think that's hilarious.
That's
we see a lot of different stuff, but I love that he's continuously just nailing Doc to the wall with a nail gun until he falls. And the very last
until
one
he crucifies
you see,
him?
Yeah, he just crucifies him. And I'm like, oh God, that's awful. Just awful. We've gotten a lot of real good, interesting deaths out of Brock in the last couple of weeks, haven't we, buddy?
Oh, we have. I'm also adding one to Homeland Insecurity where he's knifing Sash and then shaving the sass because he lost that battle.
Yes, he did.
Well, all right, buddy. Are we to our ratings then?
I think we are. What did you give this episode, man?
I think this slots well into a fun addition where, like, I know a lot happens here, but so much only happens a little bit and it doesn't matter that, like, I don't know. You get the feeling out of, like, Roy Brisby that, like, he's a very minor villain and the action is kind of wrapped up. So I think you can just sit and watch this and, you know, it would be a fun addition to have maybe just a little bit something with you.
Nice. Okay. I can appreciate that.
How about you, buddy?
So I ended up giving this a not necessary. I thought this episode was very, very good as a standalone, right? I love any shot that's taken at Disney. Any chance you can take to knock them down a peg is worth it in my book. There is a lot of laugh out loud moments in this episode for me, right? And so I see it as a good pace setter for the rest of the series. If you can all be like this, then I will very happily watch the next 7 seasons. There's some really fun characters introduced here. I'm really excited that Molotov is in this early into the series, because she'll come back again and repeatedly. We're starting to see what an episode looks like without a traditional quote unquote arching, and we're gonna have a few of those. Next week we're going to get to see probably the best Doctor Strange parody of anything. It's one of the best Marvel parodies I've ever seen. And so I'm excited because I don't think there's a big villain encounter in that episode. It's mostly just, hey, we're going to see what this new character is like. And so this episode to me shows me that you can do stuff and not have to lean so hard onto the source material or onto the whole like concept of the OSI and the guild and all that stuff. So, just lots of good stuff, and Brisby's genuinely fucking terrifying. He is genuinely terrifying. So, yeah.
Is it? No, you. Never mind. I was gonna say, is it like an Abandoned by Disney thing? But there's no way. Never mind. I'm sorry.
No, I think I can say not necessary on this episode because I watched it stone sober and laughed my ass off the whole time.
Okay.
So, that was a good indicator for me. All right, buddy. Well, I think it's about time we hop on the X1 and get on out of here. But before we do, I got to ask, has this show replaced any of your Mount Rushmores yet?
No, I'm sorry to say that it's still firmly just there. It's not bad. I like it, but...
Okay.
It's not knocking anything out of anything yet.
All right. I can respect that. I mean, I'd be a little surprised if we got halfway through the first season, maybe not even halfway through, and you were already like, yep, this is fantastic. I love it. And I've got so much more to go. But I always got to ask, you know, that's the whole thing.
Oh, I understand. So I got to ask you, is it still firmly on your Mount Rushmore, or did something happen and you're knocked off?
No, this is still very much there. This first season, as I watch it and as I get to see some of the early incarnations of these characters, I get very excited to revisit them with you, kind of from a new lens, from a different perspective, because this is for all intents and purposes like a first foray into this universe with you, and so we get to see characters like the Monarch and Dr. Girlfriend and Baron Underbite and Roy Brisby and all this stuff for the first time, and then we get to see them grow as they show back up. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited to be able to talk with you in a couple of seasons and just be able to reference back to, oh God, you remember when this was the main thing that this character did. And just have you go, yeah, I remember Johnny. So, right, yeah, on. It's still there. This show is really, it's solid. I love that we're rewatching this.
Yeah, I am enjoying my time here so far, and I'm looking forward to the future. Listeners, we hope you're looking forward to it too. How are we doing? This is episode 3. Have we established a control group yet? Well, tell us, what do you like? What do you not like? Johnny, if they had something to say about it, where could they say something about it to us?
Well, guys, you can always reach out to Mark and I. We are at the Dang Old Podcast. Yep, we kept it. Yep, we're keeping up on it. And yep, that's the best place to get a hold of us. We're Dang Old Podcast on Twitter. We're Dang Old Podcast on Instagram. We have a Facebook group. We have an email, danglepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to reach out to me personally, I'm on Instagram at Krautball. Kraut as in sauerkraut and ball as in Swedish meatball. And just in case you hadn't noticed, I'm also on Blue Sky. I am Krautball. Kraut as in sauerkraut and ball as in Swedish meatball. You can always reach out to the High Hammock family on Blue Sky. We are High Hammock Radio. That's where you're going to find all of the shows that Mark and I and our good friends do every week to kind of bring some entertainment to your bleak and joyless little lives. Mark, where else can they find you?
You can also find me on our sister podcast, the I Can't Wait to Show My Kids podcast, a cinematic review show where me and our buddy Brad, and sometimes you, John, you were just on for Dark Star not too long ago.
Yep.
Benson, Arizona is still stuck in my goddamn head.
God bless you, John Carpenter.
God bless you, John Carpenter. You can also find me over on the Two Wizards podcast, where me and my buddy Josh stare into that void so you don't have to. You can also find us on the newly incoming show, Animorph Musings, where me and Johnny take one Animorph book a week and read it, discuss it, and talk about the war crimes that we make children do and how you hand wave war crimes because they're children. In the meantime, you can also find me at Marky Stardust on Twitter.com. And, thank you for being here. Thank you for making us a part of your day. People who came over from Dangle Podcast, just in the chat, just throw something. I don't know. John, what can be, like, our signal that we say? Just, you know what, jump onto Twitter, jump onto Instagram, I don't care what it is. Just jump on there, and you just say, go Team Venture. Let us know that you came over here. Let us know that you love us, and we'll let you know that we love you. Johnny, let's get out of here, buddy.
Let's do it, buddy. And as always, go Team Venture!